Hello and welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganya in Washington. I want to thank you for joining us today on the show. And for those of you who want to check out our previous podcasts online, check us out at voanews.com/front. That's voanews.com for previous episodes. Now, as we come to the second month anniversary of the attack on the U.S. Capitol, it is important to look back at what was at stake had Congress not been able to carry out its constitutional mandate of certifying the vote. This is a critical part of the country's democratic process, and it would have been the first major disruption in the transfer of power from one democratically elected president to the next. Now, the aftershocks of the January 6th attack were felt far beyond Washington, D.C. And in Gambia, the smallest nation in mainland Africa, people like award-winning journalist and political commentator Seine Marena were glued to their television sets. For Gambia, a country that is less than 5 years out of a dictatorship, elections will be held December of this year, 2021. And this will be the first major test of its post-Yaya Jammeh period. The incumbent President Adama Barrow will be contesting for his second term in office. Now, the current constitution does not prevent the incumbent president, Adama Barrow, from seeking more additional terms if he wanted. A draft constitution that was submitted to the parliament, to the country's parliament, in September of last year, 2020, has been blocked by a section of lawmakers. But for Mr. Marena and other journalists in the Gambia, the ability of the media in that country to report on the process of these elections without fear of being, say, thrown in jail, arrested, beaten, this will be a litmus test on how far this country has come. Seine, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been a while now since we last talked. It's been 2 years, I believe.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
2 years.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to have you back again. You're in the U.S. I see you have a book with you, which is a compilation of stories. It's titled Hounded: African Journalists in Exile. We'll get to talk about this book. But, you know, we wanted to catch up, see how things have been over the last 2 years. And you know, we're coming to almost 4 years since the current president, Barrow, took over. President Barrow took over power. You have elections coming up very soon. Jammeh was known to be quite repressive of the media in his country, you know, jailing and killing journalists. Some of the stories that I told in that book, journalists who exposed some of the crimes committed to during his over 20 years in power. Tell us, how has the new leadership in Gambia changed that relationship between the government and the media?
Yeah. Thank you very much, Jackson, for having me again on your very famous and well-followed show, because many Africans are following this show, because it's a show that also help Africans to understand issues affecting them and also to provide solution to some of those issues. Coming to your question, yes, there was a democratic change, a peaceful transfer of power that happened in my country, the Gambia, after 22 years of a very brutal regime of the former president Yaya Jammeh. So it has been, it has not been an easy ride since we defeated Yaya Jammeh at polls, and then new leadership was installed in the passing of President Adama Barrow. Yes, I will tell you that you know, you cannot compare the two regimes in terms of freedom of the media and the freedom of the press. Under Yaya Jammeh, journalists were not free to even merely criticize the regime without being without risk of being going to jail. But in the case of Adama Barrow, now we have seen a lot of media houses coming in, a lot of online platform being created, and people can openly criticize the government, criticize their leaders, and also hold institutions accountable. Even though there is a lot of work to be done in order to ensure that we sustain this gain made in the area of freedom of the press and the freedom of the media. But I can tell you, so far so good, in Adama Barrow's 4 years of government rule, no journalists have been sent to exile, like in the case of Jammeh. But we have also witnessed several cases of journalists being arrested for merely doing their job.
So even though there has been change,
but
the kind of change that would not force you into exile, I should remind our listeners that the first interaction that I had with you was you were in exile, you were a refugee in Senegal at the time. You know, you had just fled for your life. But you're saying that even though there's some changes have been made, there's some instances where journalists are still being sent
taken to jail. Yeah, taken to jail. Because I remember in 2018, there was a protest against a mining company in a town where the securities were called. Yes. Three people died, and then journalists who were on the ground, two of them were arrested for merely covering that protest. And another incident was when a group of Gambians known as 3 years Jodna, that's our local meaning 3 years is up. If you remember when President Adama Barrow came to power in 2017, he said he's going to be president for 3 years and organize elections. So this group, you know, calling themselves 3 years Jodna movement, meaning 3 years is up, they organized a massive protest after Adama Barrow failed to honor the promise that he's going to resign 3 years. During that confrontation, some of my colleagues were arrested and taken to jail. Later, the Gambia Press Union has to intervene to secure their release.
So change is happening, but it's not happening fast enough, it is the pace of the changes that are happening in terms of the relationship between the government and the institutions with the media is taking place, but not.
It's kind of, you wouldn't say it's the best. You know, it's better than that of the Jammeh era. But we expect the government to expedite this reform and changes, because this was one of their promise. This was some of the promise they were able to get votes from the people, including the journalists.
Did the media fraternity as a constituency reach out to the government to start any type of conversations in regards to what they want to see changed?
Absolutely. During the drafting of a new constitution, I know we will come to that, the Gambia Press Union wrote a position paper to the Constitutional Review Commission, you know, to be captured in the final draft constitution. The objective of this position paper is to ensure that, you know, what had prevailed, you know, the draconian media laws, you know, are reformed at the best regional and international standard. But unfortunately, the draft constitution was thrown outside the parliament when it was submitted.
And so were some of those demands.
Yeah, and those demands were contained in the
issue of the constitution, of the draft constitution.
And also, as we speak, the Gambia Press Union has engaged a services of a consultant to look at the Access to Information Act, because most countries in Africa, including Liberia, have access to information which allowed journalists and even citizens to walk into government offices and demand, you know, official record to ensure transparency and accountability. So Gambia Press Union, you know, came up with this document and they sent it to the National Assembly. So I understand the act went through various stages, but it is yet to be passed to become a law.
You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. Now, since March of last year, 2020, when the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 as a global pandemic, so much has changed around the world. The pandemic has affected us in different ways, but even through all these hardship and challenges, there is no doubt that we've learned so much about ourselves and about the world around us. So as we take a quick break, let's listen in to some of your voices
on what some of the lessons you've learned during this pandemic.
Still, I'm Tabari Apple, and now if you talk about the lesson that I've learned in this COVID-19, the first thing, I'm meant to save more than the way I've been doing. Yeah, and I'm meant to invest more of my money in other things rather than only depending on my education and teaching. Yeah, right now, as I see the lesson I've learned, I'm going to start my farm for poultry when I start like this working.
Yeah, personally, I've learned that we need to save when we're working from now on, that we need to know that something else, not even corona or anything else, can happen, that we need to have a saving culture. Yeah. But since it was not a big culture, we knew that every day we'd get out and work and earn. It was not that much.
I've learned that you have to be saving money. You never know what comes in this world. You have to save money every day. You have to work hard because you don't know what will come next. That's what I've learned in COVID-19, saving.
What a lesson of being like someone who can understand other people in such a condition. Because some people, they don't have food. So if I have to help them. And if they have, they help me. And another thing which I have learned is not to spend. You have to keep your money for such conditions in case when they tell you that no more working now because of this, so that you can use that money. Yes.
I've just learned that really, as you work, you always need to have some money aside to wait for emergencies, because if I hadn't done that, maybe it would have been worse. At least because I used to save some little, I was able to carry on through the lockdown. Yeah. It has also taught me that really, life is very unpredictable. You cannot predict what is happening tomorrow.
Up front of the Voice of America, my name is Jackson Vunganyi. On the show today with me is Sene Marena. He's a Gambian award-winning journalist and political commentator. What is the relationship between the media and the people? How do the people, Gambians, understand the role of the media in their country?
Okay. The importance of the media in any democratic dispensation is very, very crucial. But because of what the Gambia went through in the past 22 years, it's very difficult for Gambians to realize the important role. Because we have a system that was out to tarnish the good reputation of the media. During Jammeh's time, he will tell the population that journalists are enemies of the state. So there was a propaganda meant to discredit the work of journalists. But when we had a new change, because journalists during Jammeh's time were the most endangered species you can remember. But when change happened, journalists were there at the forefront, educating Gambians about the need to have a democratic society, a society that is free, a society that is accommodating. You know, so people are becoming to understand the role of journalists in a democracy.
They're starting to appreciate.
They're starting to appreciate. But even though, not only government, we have received incidents of known state actors attacking journalists in the line of their duty. Mm. In one instance, it was the APRC. That's the former party of the former president Yahya Jammeh. When his mother passed away in Equatorial Guinea, journalists were covering the arrival of the body of his late mom. And when they took him to his hometown for burial, state broadcaster that I previously worked with was attacked. Their cameras stolen, their gadgets destroyed because
by party operatives
those of
are the
APRC,
ones you're calling
non-state actors. Mm. And also we have seen when the coalition government came in 2017, there was a press conference. You know, party supporters also had an encounter with an independent journalist, you know, because he asked one of the party coalition leader a question that didn't go well with the party supporters, and he was assaulted at the press conference.
So it's possible that the party of the former president Jammeh, it does not have a very good relationship
with the media. Absolutely.
I guess partly they blame them for their leader having not been able to retain power.
Absolutely.
Is that correct? Is that the reason why they have this relationship?
That's the reason. Because the other thing, they also feel that when we had change, they thought that the media were not on their side because they turned to be the opposition. Mm. So they thought that the media was not, you know, telling their own stories, forgetting that that was the same party that tormented the journalists. But even despite that, journalists were providing them coverages. As we speak, 2 days ago, the APRC held their Congress, second Congress since Jammeh's departure. And if you see the images coming from Banjul, a lot of media were in attendance to cover their Congress. So this shows to you that at least, you know, the media has been fair to both players in our current democratic dispensation. But the APRC, because of the situation they are in now, they thought the media is not on their side. Even their interim party leader once lambasted the media, describing them as, you know, a government supporters or the coalition government mouthpiece, while in the actual sense, because they were enjoying unrestricted coverage and, you know, media attention when they were in power.
During Jammeh's
time. Because
they
have, Jammeh has a total control over the entire media landscape in the Gambia. Mm. That has forced many critical journalists to go into exile, including myself. If you work with the state-owned media, you cannot do anything. You will only report things that are favorable to the state.
That are fed to you by the presidency.
What the presidency like. Mm. Or you when you open the television, you see only Jammeh's image. So Jammeh was, you know, people were forced to see what they don't even want to see because of Jammeh's tight control over the media.
Would you say that the media currently provides the same type of critical coverage Dama Barrow as it did with the Jammeh's presidency?
Absolutely, because now people are free, unlike before, free to criticize. Before, if I write a story, I think of being arrested. But now I can write a critical story of the government and go to bed without thinking of being arrested. So, you know, yes, journalists are still critical, you know, in the case of how, you know, in Jammeh's time, they were critical, but they were afraid. Most of them were practicing self-censorship in the event that, you know.
Which is honestly the worst kind of censorship.
Which is dangerous. Yeah. But as of now, I have not seen that kind of journalism, like journalists censoring themselves to put up, you know, stories that are of very national significance or stories of very, you know, important, you know, discussion. So I don't, even if there is self-censorship, you know, it's unlike before.
Okay. Yeah. So things are getting better.
Better, yeah.
Now, so Gambia is getting ready to hold an election at the end of this year.
Yeah,
2021.
Yeah.
It is important to remember that during the last elections, President Jammeh conceded, then retracted the concession a few hours later or a day later.
Yeah.
Are you confident that Gambia has moved past the legacy of Jammeh and the politics that characterize his, over 22 years in power?
Yeah. It's unfortunate that, you know, when we voted in for President Adama Barrow, he came up with wonderful promises. You know, he has injected quite a new hope in Gambians, because Gambians believe that, you know, after 22 years of dictatorship, you know, they have finally embraced democracy over dictatorship.
Mm.
4 years down the line, you know, a lot of things happened. I will come into that, because Barrow promised a new constitution. He failed in that regard. He promised that he's going to investigate the past human rights violations of the former regime. That process is still ongoing. As we speak now, people are testifying about the brutality, you know.
I'm sorry, as we talk now?
Yeah. As we speak now, you know, the promise of uncovering or investigating the past human rights violations of the former regime and to bring the perpetrators to book is ongoing. He promised that, you know, because Jammeh was someone who has embezzled or who has misappropriated a lot of state funds. And a commission was established 3 years ago to, you know, to investigate the financial dealings of the former president. That commission completed their work and they have made certain recommendations, but government is yet to implement those recommendations and to the disappointment of many Gambians.
Was the report made public?
Of course, the report was made public and it has indicted certain people in the system, but these people are still working with the government of Adama Barrow.
So people who were named or mentioned
by the report.
Abused the law during the times of Jammeh are still working
in the current dispensation.
So what does that tell you about, say, the willingness of the current president to institute reforms?
That tells you that he is not, you know, there is no political commitment to that effect to ensure that, you know, the recommendations of the Jammeh Commission are implemented to the fullest. So many Gambians are disappointed in that regard, and also the failure of the passage of the draft constitution, because one of the calls of Gambians and promises of Barrow was to deliver a legacy of a new constitution that will come into effect, because the 1997 constitution was the constitution that Jammeh used to self-perpetrate himself in power.
Oh, and there was a time when Jammeh said that he was going to be president for
1 million years.
Right. Yeah. Now, the Constitutional Review Commission's that you later worked for submitted a draft constitution to the parliament in September of last year.
Right.
Can you update us on where that process is right now, and what are some of the objections that the ruling party had with the draft?
It's unfortunate that the draft constitution that I took part in the design and also in the process, you know, failed to pass the National Assembly scrutiny, thanks to the efforts of MPs, that is the member of parliament loyal to the president.
That are aligned with the
that are aligned with the current president, Adama Barrow. Mm. Because what happened in this case is that the Barrow camp thought that the drafters of the constitution were targeting him with the term limit, because in the draft constitution the term limit was clearly spelled that the current term of the president will be counted, you know, as part of the, you know, term of the office of the president. This is something that did not go well with the office of the president and also to lawmakers who are aligned, you know, to the president.
So they wanted these 4 years to be discounted to start afresh. To then give him two more terms?
Two more term of 5 years.
Okay.
You know, and another issue also, the draft constitution is very progressive because it has also seen reducing some of the powers of the presidency, delegating those powers to the National Assembly. Mm-hmm. In one instance before, the 1997 constitution didn't call for sending names of nominees to the National Assembly, but the 2020 draft constitution, you know, made provisions for the president's nominees to go through a vetting process at the National Assembly.
So like the way we do it here in the
U.S.? Yeah, in the U.S.
So at this point, if President Barrow wanted somebody to lead an institution, he will just appoint them.
Yeah, and it will not go through any vetting.
And so they did have objections to that particular clause calling for the vetting of the legislature, I guess, the member of parliament.
Yeah.
This was... as you say, one of the most progressive constitutions on the continent. What are some of the progressive reforms aside from that one of having to vet leaders of institutional leaders? What are some of the risks of ignoring those reforms?
We will run into what we don't want to happen, you know, again, because without those check and balances and separation of power, the governance structure of the entire government will not fund some. And the new constitution made provisions where each of these government branches will be checking on each other to ensure that there is no excessive power from the other one. So, you know, those are very progressive provisions in the draft. And another progressive provision in the draft is that citizens can even sue the government, you know, if government fail to provide certain services to them. You know, so those are also very progressive. It was also giving political participation to the women folk that, look, there should be a certain percentage of women representative in the parliament.
There was a quota.
A quota system.
Right, right, right.
You know, and this is something that has been lacking.
Who did you consult during this, you know, constitutional draft process?
It's unprecedented. The consultation we had, we consulted Gambians from all walks of life, both home and abroad. We consulted Gambians in the diaspora, which has never happened before. We visited them in their in places they have high concentration. They also, you know, told us things they want to see in the constitution, like their right to vote, right to be elected, you know. So they took part in the process. I can tell you, it is one of the most engaging and most enriching process that we have never witnessed in the history of the Gambia. Like Gambians, from the start to the ending, taking part in a process like the constitutional building process.
Has there been any kind of pushback from the population about where the process is right now in terms of the draft constitution?
Absolutely. You know, when the constitution was rejected, it sent shockwaves across the Gambia, both home and abroad. People were so disappointed to an extent that they want the parliamentarians who voted against the draft to be impeached immediately. You know, even the international community, because these were they were the ones funding some part of the process. They were very disappointed because they believed that this is one of the best constitution Gambians could ever have. A constitution that, you know, create a kind of ownership. A constitution that many Gambians can relate to because they took part in both the design and the, you know, and the implementation process of it. So it everyone was shocked, including myself, because I was thinking that is the least that, you know, we can expect from this from the lawmakers.
Now,
but unfortunately, because of political differences, you know, they couldn't agree. The constitution was not able to make it to the
party. How were they attacking the draft constitution? I understand. I'm sure they didn't come out and say, we don't want the fact that the president will have to, this 4 years will be counted against him and stuff of that nature. What were some specific language used in attacking the draft constitution?
No, what they were saying in the parliament that day is that this is a constitution that have been influenced by some Western powers. And secondly, this is a constitution that have been copied and pasted from the Kenyan constitution. And this is a constitution that is likely promoting the gay right. And basically, these are not true. But because, you know, the main contention of the term limit is what they don't want to see in the draft constitution.
Are you worried that without this draft constitution, that if ever there's a process again and the constitution is signed and agreed upon, that it might not include the term limit provision? And what would be the risks of not having term limits?
I don't foresee that, because every Gambian want to see a presidential term limit to avoid what had happened with Yahya Jammeh. It's because of lack of term limit in our 1997 constitution. Yahya Jammeh was able to self-perpetrate himself in power for 22 good years. And Gambians have had enough to dictatorship, and they will not allow any dictatorship to happen in that country.
That is Gambian journalist and political commentator Sene Marena. And many thanks to you for tuning in today. Let's meet again here next time. I'm Jackson Vunganyi, wishing you a great week ahead, Africa.